Hey guys, have you heard of Urban Float? Well, if you'd like to relax and disconnect, then you should check out Urban Float in Rehoboth Beach, Delaware. It's located next to Rosenfeld's Jewish Deli in the new Ocean Atlantic Shopping Center on Route 1 North. Guests of Urban Float get to relax and float in their own flotation pod filled with purified skin temperature water and 1,200 pounds of dissolved Epsom salt. The health benefits are profound. I love it. You can book your first float at urbanfloat.com. Just be sure to select the Rehoboth Beach location and use code FIRSTTIME at checkout to receive 50% off your first float. Renew, refresh, and revive at Urban Float.
This is the Film Effect with Tiff.
You know, it's very peculiar doing things you'd never imagine. Secrets between you, God, the devil, and the dead.
Hello. Hi, everybody. This is Tiff, and you are with The Film Effect. Before I get into the show today, you guys probably can tell from what you just heard, we're actually doing a movie that is currently out in the movie theater. So this is not an old movie. It's a new movie. And I have a really awesome guest today. His name is Bruce. Bruce, say hello.
Good morning, one and all.
Good morning. I'm so happy you're here. This is awesome.
Well, I'm happy to be here. Yeah. Yes, it is.
Yeah. So actually, like I was telling you when I kind of popped this on you, like just recently, and I just like when I pop this on people and they don't even know I'm doing this, it's kind of interesting to see the response I get. And you were like super jazzed. You were like, hey, let's do it. Right?
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's exciting to be around people who are creating.
Yeah.
In the process.
Absolutely.
So yeah, I'm in.
Awesome, awesome. And you picked this movie, which was really fun for me because a lot of times people have been picking movies that are kind of like older films, and I love older films too. But I was like, oh, cool, I'll go see this movie, and it's like a fresh movie that's out. And so it was great just to give me that opportunity to just go to the movies. So I love that.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So you tell me about your interest in film and movies, just like about yourself a little bit.
I don't know how much background or how much detail you want.
Whatever you want.
I'm going to try my best to come to the point.
It's all right. We got plenty of time. You can okay. Say whatever you want. All yeah. Right.
I am 71 years old, and I went to movies. So in the early 1950s, I was born in 1948. In the early and mid 50s, in rural southern Louisiana towns, I used to go to movies with my uncle, who's my age. Mm-hmm. I won't bore you with the details.
I want the details. This is all about boring me. It's like, don't okay. Even worry. First of all, I'm like, wait a second. You're from Louisiana? Like, I did not know that.
No. I was born in Arkansas.
Oh, okay.
Raised in Louisiana and East Texas.
Oh, you were. Yeah. Wow.
So anyway, we used to go on Saturdays for a dime to the dime matinee, mm-hmm. and I just loved it. There would be some kind of a movie, Hopalong Cassidy or Gene Autry or something, mostly Westerns, and it'd be the world news reel, and that was short, and I just loved it. Mm-hmm. So it was funny. When I was 9 years old, my mother married the man who's going to become my stepfather. Up until that time, I lived with my grandparents. And we went to Mexico, and there's a story to that, and
okay.
We were living in Mexico. At any rate, one night, my father and my stepfather, whom and my mother decided they wanted to go on a date, and they decided to park me in a movie.
Huh.
So, and now we're in Mexico. I don't speak Spanish. Up until that point in my life, I kid you not, I had never spoken to another human being not known to my family.
Oh.
When I used to ride the bus around Lake Pontchartrain to visit my mother on weekends in New Orleans from time to time, my grandmother, who put me on the bus, knew the bus driver.
Huh.
I mean, my world was that small.
Wow.
So we went to, they dropped me off to this movie, and my father said, you know, just wait out front and I'll come pick you up after the movie. Mm-hmm. So the movie was a French horror film called, the name was Diabolique.
I know this film.
Need I say more?
It's a great film.
It's a great movie.
It's a great film. And they actually, if I remember correctly, I think they remade it in an American version a lot, like in the 90s. And I don't think it did very well, but I know the film that you're talking about.
Well, this was the first screening of an overseas screening of the original.
Hmm.
The movie theater was not what you think of. It was not angled. It was flat.
Right,
there were no seats. There were benches.
Wow.
It was in French with Spanish subtitles. And I don't speak read or write Spanish. And I mean, it's dark.
That is really complicated. French dark. With Spanish subtitles. That's right. Going to throw you for a real loop. Wow.
So at the end of the movie, everybody, lights come on. We go outside. There are no street lights, no nothing. And everybody goes their own way. And so this is 9-year-old American boy standing in the middle of Central Mexico.
Wow.
And down the road a little ways, there was a single incandescent street light.
Mm-hmm.
So I walked down there and waited. And my father showed up and picked me up, and you know, there was nothing awry, except that that was my first really impactful experience with movies.
Wow.
To this day, I don't like horror movies.
Oh, my gosh.
And you know, it's funny. Many, many years later, I was in my, I don't know, 20s, mid-20s, and I had a girlfriend who wanted to see The Battle of Algiers. That was a French movie. And so, okay, we went to see The Battle of Algiers. I left halfway through.
Oh.
There was, I'm not interested in horror.
Is it because of just that experience from your childhood? Has it stuck, you think, that hard?
I don't know. It might be my character.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, I think there's more than a casual connection.
Right, right.
Between, you know, that experience. And because my brother and my sisters went through a phase, they loved horror movies.
Yeah, I love horror movies. But yeah, Stephen King, I have a story about that, too. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And I wasn't, you know, I'm not interested at all. And I don't think I even watched some of the really exciting, you know, headline horror movies of the day. Rosemary's Baby.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I didn't watch it. Yeah, I don't want to see that. So,
right, right.
What interests me about the movie, I really, really, really enjoy the craft.
Oh, okay.
And I really, really, you know, am moved by... Hemingway and Fitzgerald were good buddies. Mm-hmm. And one or the other asked the other mm-hmm. what the job of the writer is.
Right, right.
And I can hear Hemingway, if it be Hemingway, say, the job of the writer is to describe the human condition, which never changes.
Mm.
And that's what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, it's great storytelling. And, yeah, I mean, that's a great story. Like, I think sometimes when I ask people this kind of question about film and why they love it, it's like I get a lot of different answers. But I think like what I'm going for a little bit on the podcast is to see, like, how are we affected by, you know, in this situation, film and movies? Because there's so many ways that art can affect people in their lives, whether it's books, whether it's any kind of art. But for me, it's always been film. And I have a lot of deep connections to certain times in my life where movies really played a pretty important part in, like, whether it was coping through circumstances or being a teenager and just kind of like getting an idea about, like, who am I in the world and, like, what is the world like? And it was kind of, I've said this many times on the show, kind of like in my like small world of suburbia, I wanted to see outside of that. And we didn't have the internet then. I mean, it's so funny because I'm not even old and my children think that, like, the internet, like, when did you guys... And I'm like, it wasn't that long ago, guys. The internet is not that old, actually. It's still kind of, you know, it seems like it's been around forever, but it really hasn't been. And, but that's a great story. And obviously, like, you didn't forget it, you know?
Yeah.
You didn't forget it. So that's really cool. So let me, can I ask too, like, in terms of that experience, did you go to the movies a lot in terms of as being a kid? Did you like going to the theater? Was that something you did? Yeah,
I went a lot. I was and am a real loner, and
oh,
I'm not
really?
A joiner,
oh,
and
okay.
I'm not a team player unless I'm the captain.
Okay.
And so, I went to movies by myself a lot.
Yeah.
And I grew up. So my family left my mother, my stepfather, my first sister. We left Mexico, moved to New Orleans, and then moved to Nashville, Tennessee, and mm-hmm. then I came to Washington. I used to go to movies a lot by myself.
Yeah.
And I even figured out how to sneak into movies for free.
Oh, nice. How'd you do that?
And so you find out where go to the movie.
Can I do this now?
Yeah, sure. Oh, I don't know. Security nowadays.
I don't know if I could do that now.
You go to the movie, and when the movie's over, go out the exit door instead of out of the front of the theater.
Yeah.
So now you know where it is.
Oh, and then you try to get in
and
there.
And back in those days, the exit door wouldn't be locked.
They didn't lock it. I'm sure they lock it now.
Yeah.
I'm
sure so you just go over there. Well, there's a one-way passage. Yeah. Anyway, but yeah, I could go to the, it was in New Orleans, it was the Orpheus Theater. And I just wandered down there for a matinee.
Right. Hey, man. I mean, listen, it's great entertainment. And back then, you didn't have TV, wasn't the same. And movies, had to go to the movies. Even for me, until VHS came along. And, you know, that was the only way you saw a movie. You couldn't just, have everything at your phone. You can't watch a movie on your phone, for God's sake. God, my kids, they just watch them on their phones. But so maybe it is different for from our generation and your generation, because I do talk to younger people, even people in their 20s now, and they can't relate to this movie theater experience thing. It's like, they don't even care. They're like, I go to the movies, I don't care. I'll just sit at home.
Yeah.
And I feel sad a little bit.
Because
I think the theater is we have a technical difficulty. Hold on one second. So I was just saying how much I love the movie theater. Love the theater.
Uh-huh.
I love to get my specific snacks. I like to ask people, what are your favorite go-to? Do you have a specific when you go to the movies?
Specific what?
Like food, like a candy choice or a soda choice or whatever.
M&M's, I like popcorn, and I like the stuff they call butter laced through it.
The stuff they call butter, yes.
I like it laced through it.
Oh yeah.
And I like M&M's peanuts.
Oh my God. I love it. Yeah. Right.
Anymore, yeah. I only drink water.
Yeah.
But I used to love fountain Cokes.
Oh, my God. He doesn't. I do that, too. I actually, that day that I went to see The Good Liar, I had a soda. Mm-hmm. And I had to deal with Pepsi because they didn't have Coke. But I was like, all right, I'll deal with that. And then popcorn. And I had some Swedish Fish, which is not usually my go-to candy. But I was like, all right, Swedish Fish. Let's do it. All right. So let's get into talking about this movie. So
I want to comment on something you said.
Oh, yeah, please, go ahead.
The medium is designed for the big screen. Mm-hmm. And watching it on a small screen, like a phone or a tablet, or even on a small TV, and I say small, 30 inches, at home, it doesn't have the same impact. You don't, or at least I don't, find myself immersed in the environment that I'm watching.
Yeah.
In The Good Liar, the director and the actors get all the credit and all the blame.
Right.
And behind that, though, are some brilliant people.
Yeah.
In The Good Liar, the costume manager was just unbelievable. Ian McKellen, was dressed perfectly, incredibly.
Yeah, totally.
Had Tattersall shirts, guards ties, Burberry coats. I mean, just perfect.
Yeah.
And you're not going to get that seeing the same scene on a phone.
Totally true. Totally true.
So anyway.
No, continue. I'm just, as your little thing I almost forgot to do. When I talk about a film, I usually like to just give my amazing audience, I love you guys so much, a little bit of the details, the facts about this film. So I'm just pulling it up real quick so I can do that real quick. But continue about what you're talking about. Yeah,
it's real hard to talk about the that particular movie without giving, what do they call it these days? A giveaway.
I know. Well, here's what I tell people, guys. We're spoiling this movie.
Yeah, spoiler.
Movie spoiling podcast. And we're going to get into it and we're going to ruin it for you. So it's, if you've signed up today or whenever this airs, you're going to have to hear it. So they know that. You guys know that. But that's fine. We're getting, maybe this is, you know what I like about this is that the fact that it's in the theater is maybe this will get people to go to the theater because they want to hear the review or us talk about it, mm-hmm. and they'll just be motivated to like, right. well, I want to hear about that. So let me go see that movie. So people who made The Good Liar, please pay me money because I'm marketing your film now.
Well, since you phrased it, what you did just as you did, I got the two tickets were $9 a piece for myself and my girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a senior and I get the senior rate.
Man,
my girlfriend is not. And for whatever reason, she gave me both tickets for $9.
Oh, that was nice.
Here's the point I really want to make. At $18, it was going to see this movie, and it lasted 102 minutes or whatever, was excellent value. Hmm. I got really, really, really good value for my $18 and my 102 minutes.
Hmm.
And that makes sense to that.
Totally.
And I've seen movies where I said, I'll never recover this hour.
No. And you're like, and now I'm out $40. I mean, that is the thing. Right. And I get that point when people say, like, going to the movies is so expensive nowadays. Mm-hmm. But I think, like, you know, we all have our hobbies. We all have our things that we like to spend money on. And for me, you know, going to the theater sometimes is what I want to do. That's the money. I know what I'm doing. I want all the experience, too. I'm like that. I'm like, I don't care. I'm buying the popcorn. I'm buying the candy.
Right.
It's the full experience for me, and I am just going to do it. And if I don't want to spend the money, then I don't go. But you're right, and I do think that's the hard part for people is sometimes, like, the cost.
Is a hard part, yeah.
Yeah, and you're in a gamble because you don't know what you're going to walk out with. You know, right. You might be like, oh, my God. And I've seen people walk out of movies, which is kind of awesome. I think the second reason I love theater, going to the theater, is to be with other people receiving the film because that's the aspect you don't get when you watch a movie at home. And there's that group mentality of, like, here we all are witnessing this movie, mm-hmm. this piece of work. And how are we all responding to it? You know, and I love to hear, I know some people don't like the disturbances from other people, like the sound of the popcorn, or the comments. But I actually kind of get a kick out of it. And, like, I kind of love to hear people, you know, quietly whisper, like, oh, my God, what's he going to do? Like, you know, I think it's kind of fun to be in it with other people, even if you don't know them. Like, I'm sitting there and I could hear, even when I went to see it, there were, like, two people in front of me. And they were getting into the movie, you know, and they're like, oh, my God, is he going to kill him? Like, you know, they're just like, they're really, they're like really into it. And I'm like, I feel like I'm almost with these people, you know, I'm like, I don't know. What are they going to do? You know, so you can't get that at home. You just get that experience. So, that's another part of the reason I love it. But what I'll do real quick, since we're very chatty, is I'm going to give you guys real quick the big facts on this film, which are that it is categorized as a crime drama mystery. I would say, like, a thriller or, you know. It's a mystery. And it's rated R. It's called The Good Liar. It is, let's see, how did they describe this film? I always like to see their little write-ups on how they try to give you a description but not give up the story.
Mm-hmm.
So what they wrote, at least on IMDb, which is where I always go, consummate con man Roy Courtney has set his sights on his latest mark, the recently widowed Betty McLeish, worth millions. But this time, what should have been a simple swindle escalates into a cat and mouse game with the ultimate stakes. Pretty good, I think. Uh-huh. That's pretty good. And it's directed by Bill Condon. Is that his name?
Yeah.
And writers Jeffrey Hatcher and Nicholas Cyril I'm probably saying it wrong. I'm sorry, Nicholas. I don't know how to say your last name. He wrote the novel. Stars Helen Mirren, Ian McKellen, Russell Tovey. Thank you. What is his name? And many other amazing people. He was the grandson. We've got Jim Carter. Great people. I thought all the actors were really good.
Jim Carter is Ian McKellen's crime partner in the movie.
That's right. Yeah.
And I don't know how much I can reveal here.
Anything. I'm telling you, this is whatever you want because we're just talking about it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Jim, what's his name?
Is
the criminal with a conscience. And his conscience gets prodded.
Yes, it really does.
With the threat of a long stretch in prison. All of a sudden he decides that,
Oh, I know. It's true. So this movie, it actually doesn't get the best reviews. It gets mediocre reviews.
Mediocre.
And I did think, you know, I think I read some of them, which I couldn't help. And then I saw it and I actually was like, well, this is way better than these reviews, I think. Mm-hmm. I will say I love Helen Mirren and mm-hmm. She's such a badass, such a great lady in general. And like, I was a little like, as I was watching and I wanted her to be a badass. I don't know why. I was like waiting for her to have that moment of like, you know, haha. And because from the preview, that's the problem with previews is you know something's coming. Mm-hmm. And I kind of, you know, she plays this kind of very nice, kind older woman who you may think is a bit naive, or they portray her as being kind of like that. And
I would say she is all those things and injured.
Right.
And it was really, for me, it was stepping back from the experience of the movie, watching her acting like she's acting. Which she is doing.
Yes.
And, you know, she and her craft was brilliantly done with her acting like she's acting.
Yes.
And
yeah.
And that breakthrough moment happens.
Right. You know? It does happen.
And one of the things I like about it, and as you say, I really, really disagree with the reviews. I think that the directing is what moved it down several notches in the, you know, the official reviewers.
That's so right on. I feel the same way. Yeah.
And the directing really misses the mark.
I think so too.
But the acting saves the movie.
Yeah.
And what I'm trying to get to is that throughout the entire movie, the tension keeps building and building and building and building. And you're sitting there expecting, you know, the crisis, and it doesn't come. And the tension keeps building.
It does. Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, it's not Alfred Hitchcock, but that's the direction it's going.
Yeah. So tell me your take on it. Like, what did you love about it? I don't know. There's interesting themes in it. Sometimes when I do this, I like to bring up the actual themes that are just like themes of life. Like mm-hmm. the concept of dishonesty, lying, playing someone that you're not, putting mm-hmm. on a role. I love thinking about that. I thought about that a lot as I was watching the film. Mm-hmm. Not to get too deep about it, but I was kind of like, what are the roles we play, you know, and why? Why do we do that? And there's a lot of that going on in this movie, whether it's because of history and circumstances and how people were forced into certain positions and what they decided to do in those kind of very, you know, those moments where they had to make a choice. And that's what they went. They, especially with Ian McKellen's character. I mean, he was a hard one to, like, in terms of the storytelling, it's like, I didn't know if I was supposed to hate him or like him. And then, like, you kind of hate him. But he's almost likable too, right? So how did you feel about that, at least? Or any of the stuff I just threw at you, which is a lot of things.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I think it was as Hemingway said, the writer brilliantly described the human condition, which has not changed. Mm. And Ian McKellen's character is a compulsive pathological liar, and he was disposed to being a liar mm-hmm. from an early age. The scene in World War II, at the end of World War II in Berlin, where, you know, he had a law enforcement partner and he's going to do official business. And he seized on the opportunity to portray himself as something other than he was.
Right.
And so I had a woman I knew a long time ago. Her niece, I was connected with the niece.
Mm-hmm.
In the course of a family conversation said that she wanted to be an actress. And the aunt said, so you want to earn your living pretending to be someone else? And, oh, man.
Thanks for the support,
yeah,
really, aunt. Yeah. I mean, really, that's really helpful. Okay, bust my dreams right there. Thank
it
you.
It was, well.
That's fun.
May I say, this girl didn't put up with that for long. But the point is, Ian McKellen's character chose to pretend to be someone else at an early age. And he made that decision. And for whatever reason, he went through the rest of his life never revisiting that decision.
Yeah.
Never looking back at that decision.
Yeah.
And He was really, really good. He could have been a great actor. That
he
character.
He really was. Yeah, no, he was. And he did. I mean, he just, yeah. You know, it didn't work out for him in the end, obviously. Right. Yeah.
He could have been, he would have been a brilliant trial lawyer.
Oh, my because God.
Because throughout
so
the movie,
true.
Throughout the movie, he's just brilliant when it comes to shooting from the hip.
Yeah.
Even to murder.
I know, like it's nothing, you know, just yeah. like boop, pop the guy on the train tracks. That's a crazy scene, actually. But he, and you know, I like, I mean, I was actually thinking maybe you're smart enough or at least not smart enough, but you have probably, you know, it's not just like knowing about film. You're older than me. You've seen more films than me. You've probably had a whole different genre of films that you were able to see, you know, while you weren't like I was a baby. So mm-hmm. I didn't get to see these until if I decided to, but I kept thinking like, is this movie reminding me of, like, what are those older movies? Because I really felt like the end scene was such a classic let's tell everybody the whole story now. You uh-huh. know, it's, like, reminding me of, like, Hitchcock or, like, some of those old thrillers, his film noir films where, like, mm-hmm. you're kind of in it and then at the end it's like, well, let me tell you how this began. And then they tell you the whole right, thing, right? You know, right. And you sit there and you go, oh, okay. Because that's how they want to tell you instead of showing you at that point. They're just going to kind of walk you through it on the flipperoo that just happened. And that's what she did. You know, she kind of just like tells him everything. And I was thinking, like, what films relate this film? You know, like what old movies remind me of this? Because it really made me think of that. And I couldn't like put my finger on one. But
what came to mind for me at the end was was not an old movie. It was Schindler's List.
Oh.
And what was his name? The commandant, you know.
Liam Neeson, I don't know. You mean that guy, the main character?
No. The commandant of the concentration camp.
Yes.
Anton somebody. I forget his last name. Anyway,
I have to see that
there's an actual newsreel strip of when the Russians got him, and they just took him out in the yard and hung him.
Right.
And then the scene breaks into all these Eastern European Jews being liberated, and the scene kind of turns to full color, and they're all moving
right
ahead, and so that the scene in The Good Liar at the end, when she's surrounded by loving family, and you know, a pond and children, and you know, everything is sweet, flowers, lilies everywhere. And what really came to mind was that scene at the end of Schindler's List.
Yeah.
When you go from this dark, you know, the house she lives in the movie, The Good Liar, was depressing as hell.
Think so?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I really threw my judgment at the door. I was kind of like, okay, well, this is how some people live. Like, I don't know. Maybe that's how she, like, because I'm not there yet in my life. Like, I would think about, like, being an older woman. Like, she's simple. You know, I kept thinking, like, she's simple. I didn't even think she was dumb or naive. Like, I just thought this is just a regular person who's very trusting and open and giving someone a try. You know, it didn't get a little weird for me until like the money thing happened. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Are you this naive? Like, you come home and this guy's got this financial advisor who's going to like ask you to share money with him and like put your money together. I'm like, come on, that's a little weird.
I didn't see her. I saw all those things, but the overreaching aspect of her character in the movie, of Helen Mirren's character in the movie, was that she was injured. She was wounded.
Okay.
And vulnerable.
Right.
And her judgment was distorted.
Okay.
And I think that came through. I think the writer did a really good job of bringing that forth.
How did you, in terms of that thought or that observation, what, like, give me an example in the film that gave you that information. Is there something you could put, like, say, like, this is a scene where I saw that or I thought that?
When her on-screen grandson kept pointing at the deficiencies in Ian McKellen's story.
Okay.
She kept denying. Mm-hmm. And she insisted that that's not what was going on. It looks like that's what's going on, but it's not going on. He's lying. You know, he blah, blah, blah.
She was like, oh, you know, she would just get upset with him.
And in the scene in Germany, when part of his real history is revealed, she's sympathetic.
I know. I know. That's a big moment. Yeah. But it's funny because a lot happens before that, right? You know, like even in the first, for me, one of the weirdest parts is when she's like, come stay in my house.
Yeah.
I'm like, what? What are you doing?
Well, no, I can see that.
Really?
I can see that.
Yeah, because why? Because he's older and like, I don't know.
Why?
Like,
because she is so vulnerable.
Okay.
And she is so in so much pain. She is looking for human contact.
And is that a thing that maybe I wouldn't get? Like, and this is the point that I think this is such an awesome conversation because you are older than me. You know, I'm 45. I'm not closer to a stage like that in my life, like where if I had to be single and have to go through that experience of looking for a partner or wanting a partner again, or losing your husband and then like being lonely. You know, was that whole thing just like you could relate to it differently? Like for people... I don't know. Like, I'm not there, you know? So, like, I wonder, just because of my life experience, how differently I kind of size that up. I don't know how... I don't know what that kind of loss and then, like, loneliness might feel like at this stage in my life. So maybe I didn't relate to it in the same way. I don't know. Do you get what I'm trying to say? Like,
I
wonder if older people watching this film have a very different feeling about, like, that opening scene, right? Like, where they're going to meet at the table and have this kind of... You know, they're doing the online thing and then they kind of meet. Like, I know it's kind of like how I feel about when I see like a movie about 20 somethings now. And I'm like, what the hell is going on with these people? Like, I just don't understand the whole way they can get like relate now, like the whole way it goes down, the way they like interact with each other, the sexuality and how free flowing everything. Like, I have a hard time sometimes. I feel old. I'm like, I don't get this. Like, I would not understand how you guys do this. But what do you think? I don't know. Oh, thank you.
Now may I answer?
Sorry, yeah, go ahead. Now you can. And by the way, I am Italian. Feel free to interrupt me at any given time. Like, okay. I'm very cool with it. You're very nice. You've been trained very well, Bruce. I am not trained very well. I'm still working on it. I'm using this podcast to alter my behavior. But yeah, go ahead.
You need to work on it.
I'm aware. Right. My audience
All
knows.
Right. Listen. Yeah. You know, you collapse a whole bunch of ideas in together, mm-hmm. and then you end with a question. The experience of this moment, that is watching the movie, the experience of this moment, how we experience this moment is shaped by our own history, right? And I well understand someone who lives in a house that is designed to be plain vanilla, all right, and who lives alone, whose only other human contact, for all appearances, is her grandson, who might very well be from a different planet in terms of what they have in common, at her age and his,
mm-hmm.
right? I well understand how when her moment of truth comes, she wants somebody standing next to her. And for that, she's willing to stand next to whomever it is, moment of truth comes. That connection, that partnership, right? Driving over here this morning, it's a beautiful morning, and the car's running good, full tank of gas, blah, blah, blah. And I'm excited about coming. Da, 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 da. As recently as an hour ago, I had the thought about plans that my girlfriend and I have discussed that I now know are not going to happen, not in this life, right? And I don't have any experience of remorse or regret or disappointment or anything like that. It's just reality,
mm-hmm.
right? That ain't happening.
Mm-hmm.
Events in our lives have overtaken us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we came here 10 years ago, over here to Delaware. I had a boat, a really nice boat, and I was going to get the boat. She and I were going to get the boat ready for sea, and we were going to move to Costa Rica. Mm-hmm. And between my retirement and my Social Security, I had enough to support us with some kind of little job in Costa Rica. And I speak, read, and write Spanish, so I mean, does life look good or what?
That's awesome.
All right. And 10 years later, I'm living in a mobile home park that I coveted.
Oh, goodness, we're having microphone issues.
It keeps sinking. All right.
You're back.
I'm back. Okay. Yeah.
No,
okay.
You're good.
So, you know, the her son, my girlfriend's son, asked me once if I like living here.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, yeah, I like living here because I do live here. And so it's easy for me at my age to choose the moment.
Mm-hmm.
I say easy. I find it easy. I don't know if it's easy for everybody else. So I can well understand Helen Mirren's character being so distraught, being so feeling so alone in the world. And the end of the movie reveals the falsity of that
so
play.
So well. She even looks hotter.
She
does. I'm like, because, you know, listen, it's funny. I remember I saw the preview in the theater, and I was with my wife, and I was like, wow, man, Helen Mirren, she's looking pretty good. Yeah. She's looking good for her age. And, you even notice that, like, not only is her whole life different than we perceived it, she's even, like, more youthful, and it's just a great... Yeah, man, that is a great twist.
When you watch the movie, it's not shocking to me.
Yeah,
I'm sure it is shocking to some people to find that the young black man who is surveilling, and he's kind of like this shadow menacing things, but not directly in the background, turns out to be her actual grandson, and. The young man portraying the role of her grandson is his lover.
Yes.
And you know,
it's that, just everything is false. You know, like all the things you thought were not true. And this is like a hard, you know, these are kind of hard movies for me. You know, it's funny, you're afraid, you don't like horror movies, which I like to watch a horror movie and it's like bedtime stories. Like, I'm so not afraid of horror movies. I'm like, oh, look at murder and violence. Oh, good, go to bed. Like, it's nothing to me. But, I get really triggered by dishonesty, and it makes me uncomfortable as hell, because I'm a very trusting person and I always try to see, like, in my own personality, you know, like the good in people. And this is like a story about, you know, watch out, like watch mm-hmm. out. People may not be what you perceive them to be. And I've been burned by that a little bit in my life in certain ways. And, so that's like my horror movie, I guess you could say. I don't know.
Well, I have to correct you on one thing. I'm not afraid of horror movies at all.
Oh, you just don't like them.
I just don't like them. Mm-hmm. And my reasoning came to me, and I guess I have some kind of a blessing. I know not from whence it comes, right? But insights just really sometimes just appear in my life and in my mind. So I was sitting here watching the Battle of Algiers, watching these people being tortured. And this is in the 1960s. And it's horrible what's going on.
Yeah.
And it was truly an important moment in time that movie was made. And the social shifting continents going on at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So the 60s, the Civil Rights Movement, the anti-war movement was just taking shape. I mean, I got out of the Army in 1968.
Okay.
And so anyway, I'm sitting there watching this movie and with this woman, and she's all excited about the movie and watching it and enthralled. And I said, I'll meet you outside. And I stood up to leave the theater, and I said, there's enough horror in this world already. I don't need to come to the movies to watch it. And then the genre of horror movies, you know, the Blair Witch. There's enough real horror in the world, mm-hmm. and I'm conscious of that, and I'm not interested in watching imaginary horror, however believable it might be.
Yeah,
you know, and you know, there are horror movies. It's easy to suspend disbelief. There used to be I forget what they call them, the Poseidon Adventure, and you know, there used to be there was this whole string of movies, Hotel or whatever. About disasters befalling large groups of people.
Yes, the disaster movie genre. Yeah,
disaster movies. There
yeah,
you go.
Disaster. You know, yeah.
You know, just turn on the TV. Look what's going on.
We don't need one right now. You're right.
That's right. So, anyway, I when it comes to movies, I'm very, very, very strongly, very much attracted to the craft, the moment of suspension of disbelief. You know, and you talked for a minute back there about distractions going on, the, you know, paperbacks. One of the things that really upsets my girlfriend is that for some reason, I think it's a Delaware thing, maybe it's in the water, but people just yak at each other at full volume during the movie. And I have not been known to stand up. And see, I'm deaf in one ear, so I can't triangulate sound. I don't know who is talking, so yeah. I just make a general announcement. Will you please shut up? Nobody came to listen to you. I've actually said that. Nobody paid their good money to sit here and listen to you.
Right, right. Well, you know, I like that. You have respect, I have to say. Good for you. I'm a little more forgiving, but I will, if people are too loud, though, like, it's kind of like, I'll take a, you know, whisper, oh my, you know, blah, blah, blah. That's okay.
Well,
you know?
Where I was going with that.
Oh, no, go, yeah.
Okay.
Sorry.
Was, I had a girlfriend years and years and years ago. Wonderful woman she was. Anyway, we used to go to movies. I took her to movies, and we went to see Jurassic Park, right? And no, it wasn't Jurassic Park, but some other movie we went to. And she leans over, and she's whispering in my ear, why did they shoot him? I thought he was a good guy.
That's great. Yeah, yeah.
And she's a really, really, really incredible woman. But on some level, she surrendered intellectual rigor. And she would, yeah. You know, just, why? I thought he was one of our guys. She's whispering in my ear. And that's very different than, oh, look at that, Hazel.
I know, it's kind of funny. I mean, I think that's the part that's a gamble. Like,
yeah,
you know, like, people could be annoying and you might have to deal with that. But
that doesn't invalidate the experience.
No, no. And hopefully you can move. I've actually moved. If I was like, holy cow, is there another spot? Yeah, I'll just get up and like, oh, it's quieter over there. I'll just go over there. Yeah, but man, we just took that on a rabbit hole. Where did I go? I don't even know.
Well, I learned one thing in French. Je ne sais pas. This means I don't know.
I don't know. No lo so. Isn't that Spanish?
What is it?
That's Italian. No lo so.
That's not Spanish.
That's Italian. I know a little Italian. Yes. So, you know, let's get back in. So, speaking of dishonesty or just like how they even bring you into this film, which I thought was really interesting. I didn't expect it to happen right away. I don't know why, but you see them through the opening credits, you know, conversing through the dating site online. Mm-hmm. They're just texting back and, you know, they're writing back and forth. And then you see them at the table and right away he's like, that's not my real name. Mm-hmm. That was interesting. And I'm like, obviously he's trying to set up this woman to really think, oh, what a nice guy. He's being super honest.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's part of like one of his little tricks is to like kind of fool you with this little moment and then say that. What do you think?
The lie was, I want to trust you. I'm going to trust you. That's the lie.
That's the lie. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, first he issues a disclaimer. I intensely dislike dishonesty.
I know, right? It's so slick. But she does it too. She's like, my name's not Estelle.
Yeah, but see, they were not playing to her script, or rather, they were not playing to his script. They were playing to her script.
Okay.
And that's the script that he didn't know.
That's right.
The con was being reversed.
Yeah.
And so the con that they pulled on the guy that he ends up killing is called a big store. And there's a lot that's a structure of con game. Mm-hmm. If you Google what is the con game, the big store, right? You will get the plot that they were spinning, that all these guys are spinning,
right?
And Jim, what's his name, refers to it in a later conversation, and they say, yeah, you have to, you got a pot of $100,000, you got to split it too many ways, and blah blah blah, and that reveals that there's this structure behind that particular con.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see? There was a guy in Washington I knew years and years. This is a long time ago. And he used to hang around outside a big high-end department store in Washington called Wood. I can't remember the name of it now. But it was like Lord & Taylor. And it was a big department store. And he would hang around outside the shipping department on the street in Washington, D.C. and buttonhole people walking by. And his con was, a friend of mine works in Lord & Taylor's, whatever the name it was, and he's got a new Sony Trinitron TV that fell off the truck, so to speak. And if you'll give me $50, I'll go and give him $25 and bring the TV out with me. And $25 for him, $25 for me. And people would pony up.
Would they really?
And he would go in the back door and out the front door and go have a few beers.
Oh, my God.
All right. So that's a different kind of con.
Yeah.
And so the you know, if you like movies, you'll love Con Games.
I mean, yeah.
Not to be the victim or the participant, but so that goes on.
Yeah.
And that was revealed in the movie, in the structure. The writing in that movie was just excellent.
Yeah, and I agree with you. Like, I feel like it was missing something directing-wise, but, mm-hmm. like, it still held my attention because they don't give you too much throughout the story. Like, they're kind of, you're kind of like, well, is he a mafia guy? Like, I kept thinking, like, who is this guy? You know, mm-hmm. like, he's doing this. Things became clear, but, like, they didn't give you too much, you know? Mm-hmm. And it was, like, little pieces. And I have to say, like, I appreciated the pace. This is something I talk about. I talked about this recently with someone. I just, like, lately when I'm home and I want to watch a movie, I've been finding myself watching older films lately because mm-hmm. of the pace. Sometimes these movies now are so fast. Mm-hmm. There's so much freaking music.
And it's so full of eye candy.
It's too much. Yeah. And I'm like, slow it down. Like, let people be on the screen. Like, stop with the, like, crazy. And that's a generational thing. And I think that's because of, like, the younger filmmakers and the audience is young. You know, people want things, like... It's what's changing the film as an art. You know, it's changing it.
Mm-hmm.
You watch an old movie. I mean, it's funny too because I've had my kids watch an older film with me, and they're like bored. They're like, "Oh, this is just boring," you know. And I'm like, "It's just take your time. It's a story. Uh-huh. Give it a minute." But a lot of people are impatient.
Right?
Do you find that?
Yeah, absolutely, I do. And you know, somebody has become inured to peak experiences, mm-hmm. and moving from one peak experience to the next, you know. And so there's a big car scene, the car rolls over, and then in the next scene, it's two cars, and one of them blows up, you know. And then the next scene, you know, they run over like that. And I'm there to see the actors act, and I'm there to see the director direct. And there one scene in The Good Liar that really made it hard for me to hang on to that suspension of disbelief was the scene in the mansion in Berlin when she's cutting up the carpet and, you know, taking up the carpet to get into the floor and to find that piece of evidence connecting. And it's just not possible that a woman with manicured fingernails... is going to cut and pull up a piece of carpet and then use a letter opener to pry up a piece of the floor.
I love
honey,
that you said
it
that.
Ain't happening.
No, and I'm really glad you just said that because I remember watching it and I'm not like a person that knows much about carpeting and I'm not, you know? And so I kept thinking like, can you do that actually? I had that thought. I'm like, I think it's harder than that to just like rip up the carpet. But I went, all right, maybe she's Helen Mirren and she's super badass. She can just like open up the carpet and be like, look at me, you know?
Well, she's got a secret. She's Supergirl.
She is. She's super strong and her hands are amazing. But yeah, that's, you know, that's funny.
You see what I mean though?
Yeah, I do. I totally get it. Yeah,
that intrudes on your suspension of disbelief.
Yeah.
You do you see what I'm saying?
I do. Okay. I do.
And the difference in going back to Schindler's List, right? There is no moment in the movie that is not absolutely drop dead believable.
Well, Spielberg, you know, he's a good one.
That's a difference.
Yeah, I mean, you know, different directors do different things.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
if you like old movies, I have one to suggest.
Please tell me.
It's not going any further than this. There are reasons that this movie comes to mind that I'm not going to reveal.
Okay.
It's an early Warren Beatty movie, early 1960s, and I urge you to watch it. And watch it on as big a screen as you can. It's an old black and white movie. Warren Beatty's young. And so anyway, the name of the movie is Lilith. L-I-L-I-T-H.
Okay.
Lilith.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is he is a Korean War veteran. And he is in Maryland. The movie's set in Maryland. Maryland, I don't know if you're aware of it or not. You may know more about it than I do. But they're... All across Maryland, there are these enclaves, these pockets of people who have been wealthy for a long time.
Okay.
And mansions. At the end of a road, there's a mansion. And you know, farms and the like, small communities that are quite prosperous.
Hmm.
He comes from one of these little towns. And one of the the mansions has been turned into what used to be called an asylum. And what it is a inpatient facility for the mentally ill.
Wow. All
right. And so, and just, you know, he needs some kind of a job. So he takes a job at this facility. One of the patients is this incredibly beautiful young woman who, I don't know what she has, schizophrenia or whatever. But anyway, she is lost. Mm-hmm. And he just gets further and further and further into her world.
Oh.
Until the end. And I don't want to reveal too much.
No, don't. Yeah, I'll watch it for sure.
I'm telling you, it is just, it'll get you.
I love it. I love a great suggestion, too. Yeah.
It'll get you. So, and it's got some really, really excellent eye. He's talking to his high school sweetheart. And she's married and got a couple of kids and blah, blah, blah. And she's, so I'm going to use his name. She in this scene, she says to him, you remember I wouldn't sleep with you until I was married. And he's, yeah. And this is young Warren Beatty, very intense man. I mean, he makes early Johnny Depp look like a cartoon.
I know, he was like a gorgeous man.
And she says, remember I wouldn't sleep with you until I was married. He says, yeah. And she says, well, I'm married now.
Oh,
and you know, and the look between the two, it's just heart stopping acting.
Well, maybe I'll watch it and we can have you back on and talk about that movie. That would be kind of cool.
Okay,
maybe. Just a maybe.
No, I'm willing to do it.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
immediately the obstacles to my watching it again come to mind.
Oh wow, okay.
So but yeah I can do that.
Well it's that. Just a thought, but yeah. Yeah,
but no, okay, hang on to that thought.
Oh, okay. No, yeah, go ahead.
That's all.
Oh, yeah, I'll hang on to it. So I guess we should get back to it. So what's your favorite scene in The Good Liar? Like, did you have a scene that was like, oh, that was a great scene?
There were a lot of great scenes.
Mm-hmm.
I would think the subway scene really, you know, he's trying to escape, and Ian McKellen's trying to escape, but he never panics. You know, he takes it to the next level up. He escalates.
And it's quite, it is. And it's, go ahead, sorry.
And then, so there's prologue and there's crisis and there's resolution mm-hmm. in that scene. Mm-hmm. And then there's the escape. And, you know, he has the presence of mind to just, you know, quickly take off his overcoat and throw it, give it to the street musician. That's his identifier. Oh, the man who pushed him on there has a brown coat. They're looking for a man with a brown coat. He doesn't have a brown coat.
It's so slick, you know.
Yeah, he has the presence of mind, and you know he is a good liar.
He's a good liar, but it also shows you how much he's been doing this.
Yeah,
you know, it's like this is an older guy who really knows how to operate this way, and he's got a lot of practice at it. And it's like nothing for him to just kind of like keep his cool, you know. And it's entertaining. Listen, it is a movie.
It is a movie.
We're there
to be entertained.
It's not real life. You
You're
know,
right.
I'm like, all right, that was fucking cool. Like, that's what I said. I was like, all right, look at him, you know. So, and I kind of, those scenes in movies are always fun too, though, because that's what we go to the movies for, you know. It's not reality. I kept thinking, like, could you do that in real life? I don't know.
Yeah,
maybe
the scene between the three of them in the between he and his policeman partner and the guy they're looking for, the scene in the Berlin apartment, the fight scene was pretty realistic. I found that to be that, yeah, it could easily go that way.
Yeah,
and you know, it's not Evander Holyfield standing there and duking it out with somebody.
Right, I know.
It's two men, you know, who are going to try to kill each other.
Yeah,
with their bare hands, and so that was a really believable fight scene, and the yelling at each other, the screaming, and that was very believable.
Yeah, I have to give it to those two actors that Are you talking about that? You're talking about the scene in Berlin, not the end scene.
Right, the scene in Berlin.
In addition to that, that just made me think of the end scene, which where they like Helen Mirren and him have to physically get into it.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, my God, for these older actors, like they're really getting into it, you know. Uh-huh. And I kind of felt scared for them. Yeah. I was kind of like, don't hurt Helen. She's very old. Like, just give her a break. But he's like, and he's like, really? I mean, it was very real. I thought they did a really good job of at least like.
I thought so, too. And, yeah. And I was thinking about that as you spoke. Throughout the movie, if there was a body double for Ian McKellen, the filmography was just excellent.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I couldn't see when he was running up the stairs after the murder. I couldn't see Ian McKellen in his 70s. But then I'm in my 70s and I can run up the
steps.
You're fine. Like that.
Yeah. I mean, there's plenty of people that are awesome in their 70s, so. Right? Like, yeah. But I guess because we see him play all these different sides, you know, he's limping and then he's walking and it's like,
right.
You know, but I did. I thought that was an awesome scene. So you liked that. So you were saying, I'm sorry, backtracking, your favorite scene, or at least the scene that you thought was really like an impacting scene and you just kind of described it. The fight scene. Is there any other scene that like kind of, or no, you were talking about the scene where he kicked the guy into the train and killed him.
Uh-huh.
That was the scene.
That was a big deal. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm trying to think if there's one for me. Oh man. I can't, that one too, I think for me, the same exact scene.
He had, I don't know if it was a lighter or a money clip or a ring or something. But his only weapon in that scene was something like a ring knife. And a ring knife is a curved blade that recesses into the ring. And you can flick it out, and then your hand, you've made a fist, and the ring is on, and this hooked blade is projecting out.
I had no idea that's what that was.
And that's, yeah, I think that's what it was. And because you see, in seconds before the actual fight commences, you see him make some kind of a motion.
And I didn't even know that existed, that was something you could have.
Well, there you go.
Holy cow.
And so I think that's what he, and then it was on his left hand, and he hooked it with his left hand into the other man's eye.
Brutal.
And yeah, that was brutal. Like, ouch!
I was like, his eye. I don't know what it is about eyes in movies. Like, if you go for someone's eyes, it really bothers me. I'm like, not the eyes. Oh my God, Jesus.
Well, you got to have eyes to watch the movie.
You do, but it's like, holy cow. It's like, it's like the most like cringy thing to watch.
That's going to incapacitate the other guy. And you know, having that weapon and that furtive, that surreptitious weapon that he could deploy, unbeknownst to the other guy, it would not have been anywhere near as impactful had he just used a finger jab into the eye.
Well, he was slick, you know. I liked it. He was like, I'm just going to use my ring. Boom.
He knew his trade.
He really did. And there was a simplicity about it, which is so cool, you know, because you kind of have to go, how could a guy this age do that? Well, that's how he does it. It's got a little ring and right in the eye. Okay. So I'm trying to think, any other thoughts that you have on, maybe even the critic reviews or on this film?
When after you and I talked about this, I read the reviews.
Okay.
And, I'm no Roger Ebert.
Who is?
And, I thought that, what strikes me, and I can't get over this. I also read the New York Times review and I forget who the reviewer is, but anyway. It seems to me that reviewers do a lot of posturing.
Mm-hmm.
Roger Ebert, less so than most, if any, less so than anybody else. And I thought his review was pretty fair and pretty even-handed. And he said he couldn't talk about the movie at all without, making it a spoiler, spoiling the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't. And so well,
that's nice of him.
Within those constraints, he does a pretty good job of the review, and he and I agree on the directing, right? And the other reviews, I wasn't impressed at all. I read the tomatoes, four tomatoes, three tomatoes, whatever it is.
Rotten Tomatoes.
There you go. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a really bad review, and not really bad. It was just not very complimentary. And there was some very, very, very good acting and very, very good property management and very, very good.
Right.
You know, there are many really excellent components. It was a good plot line. The reason the big store con has been around for 100 years is that it works.
Mm-hmm.
And it works in real life and it works in a movie, in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole thing was just really believable. And one of the things I have to confess at the end that really satisfied me, really pleased me, was there is justice in the world.
Oh, thank God. I know. Sometimes it's just sad.
Ian McKellen, I'm not sad at all. Me and Kelly, yeah. You know, his character ends up, you know, in a public health service nursing home drooling.
And you know, that's what, and I'll add to your comment on, like, we're just keep talking about the actors and how great they are. Yeah, he's great in that scene. I mean, isn't he? I know it seems like nothing to sit there and be like drooling or whatever, but like, he's so good. Like, I just, you know, to see the transformation of him, it's just, right. And it's sad, and not sad, but like, it felt like, that's what it needs to be, you know? That's what we need to see right now, is him, like, try to drink out of a cup and it doesn't work for him. He's just sitting there. So just real quickly about the directing, when you say, because we're kind of, like, over, you know, we're kind of vaguely saying the directing wasn't great. Like, how do you know the directing isn't great? Like, what were the things that made you realize that?
Well, specific things, we've mentioned a couple of them.
Mm-hmm.
The scene with the carpet in Helen Mirren, and when there's a break in, and I know we're there to watch a movie, and mm-hmm. we're there to be entertained, and like watching a movie, like watching a magician, you, in order to get the purpose of the demonstration or the exhibition, whatever it is. You have to suspend disbelief.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there really wasn't a rabbit in that ad. You know?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So when in the course of the movie there are breaks in my suspension of disbelief, I automatically instantly go to why. Okay. And so looking at Ian McKellen's character's dress throughout the movie reinforced, supported, at least, my suspension of disbelief. Or rather, do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
The shirts, he didn't have on a shirt that, but in today's price, is less than $100.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Tattersall. Right? He had on ties, no less than $50 a piece. All right? Guards ties. And Burberry coat. That coat is $300.
Oh, my God. All right. He's a nicely dressed man.
It was just excellent. And that was very impactful in my believing the story.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This elderly lady tearing up carpet with her bare hands was not believable. Mm. Does that answer your question?
It does. And then I think, like, to follow up that is, like, how do you do that scene then? Because obviously this was in the story from the book or whatever mm-hmm. that scene was. Maybe, mm-hmm. you know, when you're reading it, you just go along with it.
Mm-hmm.
Or was that extra detail that, I wonder, like, was that extra detail that he added to the movie the way she did it? I don't know, because I have no comparison, because I didn't read the book. But then I think, how could you do that scene in a believable way?
Well, the impression is, and I would argue, of course, not being on the set, but I would argue that those scenes are made up on the fly.
Okay.
There was a movie, do you remember Romancing the Stone?
Oh, yeah. And one of my favorite movies of all time. Love
what's
it.
Her name?
Now you made... Oh, wow, my brain.
Yeah, me too.
What just happened? That's so terrible.
Anyway, so...
Okay,
Kelly,
you guys
the name
know.
K,
you
starts
guys
with
know.
A K, comes in. So, anyway, at the end of... at the conclusion of one of the romance novels she was writing, she's really, really wrapped up and, you know, she's weeping with relief at the end of the story, and she walks over and she picks up a miniature bottle of vodka, I guess it was vodka, and then she opens a drawer and takes out a little pair of pliers and uses the pliers to open the bottle. That was a directing detail that was just perfect.
Yeah, it's perfect.
I mean, it's perfect.
Yeah.
You know, and you wouldn't expect a woman and castigate me if you will, but you wouldn't expect a woman to have the hand strength to unscrew that little bottle of
okay,
thing, right?
Yeah.
Not saying, but so that was a directing detail that really made that moment in the movie believable.
Mm-hmm. I get it. No. Yeah. And I'm thinking, like, how would you make that scene? You know, I went to film school and I have experience. And I don't know if you know,
but no,
if you listen
I didn't
to these,
that.
If you start listening to this, you're going to understand a little bit more about okay. me, some of these episodes. I don't want to bore you guys. You guys already know. So, but yeah, so like I think that is sometimes a script thing and sometimes it's a cinematographer choice. You know, there's maybe a conversation about how are we going to shoot this. And I think sometimes the smartest storytelling in film is to not show us so much. You know, I can think of a million examples where you don't need to see it. Like, you know, and I kept thinking, like, how could you do that without her? We watch her literally, like, take a pair of scissors and, I mean, come on. Like, you can't just stab into a carpet with a regular pair of scissors, can you? I don't, there's got to be another way. So I'm like, maybe we didn't need to see that complete process to get that information.
She went there to the apartment. And you know, there's a description. It's now a museum, a daycare center. And mm-hmm. So she went there knowing her purpose and knowing what she was going to find. Mm-hmm. And hoping to find something else. And it would have been believable had she had in her, tucked away in her purse, a little box cutter.
Oh.
And a screwdriver.
There you go.
See?
Yeah, yeah.
And as a dramatic touch, when she found it, she could have, God damn it, and thrown her tools in the hole to walk away.
Yeah, see, and that's the conversation, right? And when filmmaking happens, that's what people, more than one person, probably are sitting around going, how are we going to make this happen?
Yeah.
You know, what's our choice here? Or maybe it is just the writer's choice or the director's choice in that moment.
It's the director's choice. He gets the blame.
He does. But sometimes the directors, and this is like something we don't ever know, right? There's like the magic of movie making. And I think it's a collaborative effort. You know, when my small experience with film school and making some short films, you know, I couldn't do it by myself. You can't do it alone. So in the end, even if you try to plan perfectly, you know, every little aspect, the actors bring something, the camera guy brings something. In the end, it's not fully your totally exact, you know, idea, because everyone is adding something. And even with the most control possible, that stuff gets in there, you mm-hmm. know? And so I always think when I watch a movie, like how much of that was the director's choice, or how much was that a conversation between the camera guy and him? Or even, you just, and we'll never know, you know, unless I got to sit down with Bill. Hey, Bill, tell me, what did you do there? Yeah, so that's
I'll tell you how we'll know. You by consistency in excellence, or consistency in blank spots over the actor or the directors or the music composer. It's consistency over their career. Over time.
Over their other films, too.
Yeah.
And you start to look at all of them. So right. That's a good answer. I like that answer. Yeah. I'll make one criticism, if you're interested. I had trouble with the music. It was too much to me.
Yeah.
I have trouble with, like, let's let it be quiet. Why do we have to have even the most, like, subtle amount of, you know, background music?
Yeah.
It doesn't need it.
I completely agree with you. As a movie I really, really liked was Absence of Malice.
And it's a good movie.
It's a good movie.
Yeah.
Paul Newman and Sally Fields and the whole
yes.
thing is believable. There's a con written around that movie. See, the plot.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, yeah.
And the music was awful.
I know.
It was like Mantovani's greatest hits.
Well, I wonder what that choice is. Is it because they just, the
well,
guy
I,
gets carried away or
I have
what?
A comment on that.
Okay.
I really like Randy Newman. I was a Randy Newman fan way in the hell and gone back. And I heard an interview with him recently, within the past year, and he says he doesn't write for movies anymore because the producers want a big name movie guy. And they don't care what kind of music's actually in the movie.
Oh, that's such a terrible thing.
Yeah. And it really, now there are examples of, I mean, who can not remember 2001: A Space Odyssey you know, opens with Wagner's, you know, anyway.
Amazing. No, you're right. It's so important. Yeah. Yeah.
There's a movie that I really liked, and I have not been able to find it on the internet. Elvira Madigan is the name of the movie, and it's Swedish.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about this tightrope walker, Elvira Madigan, and her lover is an officer in the Swedish Army, and he deserts, and they run off in the woods. And it the music for the whole movie is Mozart's Symphony No. 40 in G. Da-dum, 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 da-da-da-da-dum.
That's cool.
Da-dum. And it's beautiful.
That's amazing.
It's beautiful. I mean, you weep.
I know, and that's why I get a little annoyed, because I'm like, come on, guys. Like, you know, what did
I'm
you do
completely
here?
Completely with you on that.
That's lazy, what just happened.
Yeah.
And it was unnecessary, and nobody cared. I felt like nobody really tried. Really. It was, like, pretty... standard, like, you know, packaged, like, poof, there it goes, put the movie out.
I completely agree with you.
Yeah, and you know what, I just thought of, you know, and it's funny, I didn't even think about this movie compared to this one, but it's another Khan story that is, like, an incredible movie that I think is going to be up for some awards. This movie Parasite came out. It's an Asian film, so it's a foreign film.
Mm-hmm.
And it was only in the theater for like a hot minute. Nobody went to see it, you know, around here. It's like, I went and there were like two people in the theater, like me and Nicole and two other people were like, nobody cares. Like, it's just, they weren't going to make any money off that, at least in this town. But it's a great movie that kind of does everything well. The music, the acting, the storytelling. And if you wait till it comes out to rent, but you should totally see this movie because it's amazing. And it's a great story about all the same things, which is like, you know,
the human condition
and a family that does it as a whole, like a whole family conning, yeah. Which is just really crazy. So, and it goes in places you would never expect it to go. It's a great, especially since I've talked to you now about this, you're going to love it.
Okay. Parasite.
Yeah. And it does everything well. It does everything well. So it's like one of those movies where you go like, man, they hit the nail on the head with everything in this film. But yeah, so I don't know. I mean, maybe we've talked a while. What do you think?
So.
Do you have any thought, like last minute thoughts about, I don't know, this film or anything coming to the surface?
Well, you know, first and last, I have to say, it was for my $18, or if it had been quite a bit more than $18, it would have been good value. It accomplished, you know, what I went to the movies to do, which is be entertained. And the process was very enjoyable. And I didn't get distracted too much. And you know, my own conceit is part of the reason that I am so critical of the directing.
Yeah.
You know, and so impressed with the other aspects. You know, I used to say of Robert De Niro, you know, if he was cast as Donald Duck, he'd be believable.
Of Robert De Niro. He kind of looks like my dad, which my dad is coming on the show, you guys. I'm just letting you know.
You know, I didn't even know who Robert De Niro was.
Really?
And I went to a movie called titled The Deer Hunter.
Oh, that movie.
Oh,
that's another one. That takes like 3 hours to talk about a movie. Whoa. Holy cow.
The scene in the hut when they're playing Russian roulette. Oh my God.
And Christopher Walken, like amazing, amazing people. And just, it's a hard rewatch, that movie. You know, you see it one time and it's like, I don't know if I can take it again. Because it's just so like, talk about the human condition on so many levels, right?
Christopher Walken is one of the most underrated movie actors that I'm aware of.
I think he's amazing.
What was the movie set in the Wyoming Range Wars, Lincoln County Range Wars? And he was in it.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe I missed that one.
I wish I could think of the name of it. But you know, it's real long.
Is it really?
Western. Yeah, it's a Western.
I'm into Westerns now, guys. I don't know. That's new for me.
He's in so many roles. He's just so brilliant.
He really is. Yeah, he's awesome. Yeah. So I guess the last question I'll say is, is he a good liar? Isn't that what we should say? Is it? I guess he really, I guess maybe not.
Who?
Any of them. Are they all good liars? Does the title?
The director's not that good a liar.
No, he's not a good liar. I'm definitely right. not a good liar. But I'm a bad liar.
Everybody else in the movie is just really, really excellent.
Yeah,
excellent.
They really were. Right. Well,
and being a liar, you have to remember that the premise is people want to believe you.
Mm.
All right. One of the human conditions is the three things that we want most and are compelled by are sex, security, and the society of like-minded people. And so looking for somebody to go into agreement with us, you know, and the con man is looking for somebody to go into agreement with the idea that this is not illegal, but it's not good either.
Wow.
But you're going to make a lot of money.
That's a great way of putting it. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you really think so? Thank you.
No, I do. I mean, I have a thing where I think that most people on all levels just want to connect.
That's right.
That's it. It's that's not even exactly complicated. Right. It's just that simple.
That's
and
exactly
I
right.
say this to my kids when they're nervous or I don't know how to talk to people. I'm like, put a smile on your face and walk in there. People want to like you.
That's right.
We all want to like each other. We don't look to not connect. We actually are built to connect. That's like what we're made up to do. It's we complicate it with our brains and everything else. But that is also why a con man can succeed because
right.
most people are...
They want to believe.
They want to believe you, and so you've already, you know, you've got a winning, you know, strategy to begin with. If you can just make people believe you. Mm-hmm. Well, Bruce, thank you so much. This
well,
is
Tim,
awesome.
Thank you so much.
I'm
having a blast. I will
this
say,
is fun. It's so much fun. Yeah.
I it would have been hard to talk and eat at the same time, but donuts would have been nice.
I know. I've thought about bringing food to this experience, but I have found that it's nobody wants to hear me go. And so it's a little complicated, but yeah, but thank you. This was a great conversation. And for everyone listening, please like, subscribe, follow me on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, all of the podcast platforms.
What about LMNOP? They got
that too. We got RSPN. We got lots of like acronyms for you guys. But also I do want to plug the other shows on this Rehoboth podcast social network. So we have Anonymous, an honest recovery podcast. We have Food Therapy with Gretchen. We have Broken Stoked. We have The Full Send with Tom and Tiff. And also a new show that is kind of hiding under Rehoboth Social's channel, which is The Gifted with Julie. And so much content. You guys don't know. I don't even know. If you want to hear us talk about all sorts of things, there's so much out there. So please follow us and listen. And I'll see you next time on The Film Effect. Thanks. Thanks, Bruce.
Thanks. Good night.
Good night. Goodbye.